Emerald City Video. This is Russ.
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
Hello and welcome to the Emerald City Video Podcast. This is our new release wall episode for Star Wars, The Last Jedi, which I know at least our two hardcore fans have been looking forward to. I'm Russ, and with me is Zach.
Hello.
Probably at the end of this episode, we'll have Logan call in for the sake of the audio folk, because he, I know, had thoughts. I don't know what his thoughts are. I didn't talk to him about it, because I had not yet seen the film when he did. So, first of all, are we 100% sure that this movie's over yet? Because it felt like it ended about seven times.
Yeah. No, it certainly was... several endings. Certainly several different films, honestly. Oh, why are my flashers on?
Anyway. Just flashing people.
Yep.
But...
yeah.
I mean, in general, I liked it a lot. I think that the... It's interesting to me because it feels more like it's a follow-up to Rogue One, which happens to have the main saga characters in it.
Yeah.
More so than being a follow-up to the main saga.
Yeah. Yeah, no, most certainly. It has that feeling. Was it a friend of mine who's a political journalist said it's a film that celebrates suicide bombers?
Yeah.
Which... Are we doing this spoilery, or I suppose it's a week on, or...
Yeah, well, at this point, it's a new release wall episode. We usually try not to be spoilery, but yeah, it's been, like, almost a week, and I think everybody in the universe has pretty much seen this film who has any interest in seeing it. So we'll say spoilers on for this one.
Yeah.
We didn't spoil Justice League, and we never got around to doing the spoiler discussion, so...
Yeah.
There were a couple of things that didn't sit quite right with me, although I mostly really liked it. Mm-hmm. I will say, jumping right into spoiler territory, that Luke walking into the tornado from Man of Steel was kind of weird.
Yeah, I can see that.
But, I mean, I get it, that he overexerted himself, and that this was the end of what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
But it was... It felt weirdly anticlimactic, especially because they had just done the whole thing with him making a point of not letting Kylo Ren kill him, but then also letting Kylo Ren kill him.
Yeah, but the thing that they're clearly doing is just that the cycles and, like, literally every single, you know, from the Death Star to the, you know, every single thing from the original trilogy... Mm-hmm. is repeating itself. So he's Obi-Wan, you know, basically, you know, the cape disappears or whatever. And so, like, I kind of saw that coming basically the moment they I thought he was going to actually do the, like, original, you know, Darth Vader thing. But I like the way that they did it. I like the fact that they changed it up a bit.
Yeah, I kind of figured they wouldn't do that simply because I do think there comes a point. Because we saw him cut down Han, I think there does come a point where you can't have him stabbed to death all
the original cast.
Original cast without, you know. I like the fact that this one, you know, everybody has kind of commented on the idea that whether by design or by happy accident, by the time it was all done, that the original trilogy was the redemption story for Anakin Skywalker.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that they essentially threw out that concept for Ben in this episode, where it just became, you know, they gave him literally every chance to redeem himself. He kills Snoke and looks like he's on the road to redemption.
Yeah.
His mother finally comes to the realization that there's no good left in him.
And then it gives the okay for him to be killed. So.
And so I think that I like that. I do like, you know, this is a whole universe that's... And maybe this is why I think it feels more like a Rogue One thing.
Yeah.
It's a whole universe that is about the dichotomy of light and dark, and this is a very, very gray movie.
Yeah.
There's this weird question of cause and effect of, you know, Luke senses that he was beyond redemption and briefly considers murdering him, and that betrayal is the flashpoint moment.
Yeah.
where
the spark.
where they decide for realsies that he's evil. So that's,
and there's a weird whether Snoke is actually manipulating them or just saying that. I like that a lot. The fact that we're not quite sure. The fact that they can see each other even after Snoke is dead.
Yeah.
I'm not at all a Star Wars fanboy. But so I guess it, my opinion probably doesn't count because I guess that's the only opinions that count. I think that this was the best Star Wars film since the original trilogy. I think that this film is also the film that Lucas wanted to make with the prequels. And the fact that there's a shit ton of cutesy little stuff. Yeah. There's like stuffed animal stuff and, you know, and action fit, you know, just, you could see the product placement happening, but it wasn't Jar Jar Binks. It wasn't, you know, the little, whatever, the puffin creatures. I forget what they're called.
Korgs.
Yeah. I mean,
not to be confused with Korg, the guy from Thor Ragnarok.
Sure.
Was trying to start a revolution as well.
Yes. But like, it was just adorable enough, but still not entering quite into, I guess, Ewok territory, where it's like overwhelming the story.
Yeah, one thing I will say is, for me personally, it lacked a sense of wonder that the previous film had, in terms of, I didn't get the emotional resonance of like, oh god, it's Star Wars. That might just be a matter of, now that there's one every year, it's not as significant anymore, or it might be the way that the film was put together, because again, it's a film that deals in shades of gray. It doesn't have the kind of sweeping mythical scope that, you know, and again, we had this conversation about Rogue One, of the idea of making a Star Wars movie that's actually a war movie fundamentally alters the chemistry of the black and white morality. So I do think I can see why some people are not, feel like it doesn't feel like a Star Wars movie, because it lacks that kind of mythical sense of wonder.
Well, it's also, I mean, I also say, like, since, I mean, it's just, the people that say that it doesn't feel like a Star Wars film are the same people, for the most part, that, you know, haven't liked a single film. Like, they didn't like, you know, Force Awakens, they didn't like Rogue One. And I don't know what, other than, you know, yet they still have some heart, a lot of them still have some, like, closeness to the fucking atrociousness of the prequels, that were just genuinely terrible films that don't stand up at all. Like, the original looks better, is better, right? The writing's better, everything is better, the original trilogy, than the prequels are, even though there's a, what, 30-year difference or 20-year difference between the, you know, two of them. And I don't know. Like, for me, it enters the Batman versus Superman, you know, that kind of plunge.
Well, that's a definite parallel in terms of, I'm not saying that I didn't like it because it lacked that.
Yeah.
I will say that I felt that it lacked that, and that it changes the film's identity in a fundamental way. Yeah. And I know a lot of people didn't like, and I think that you're right. Like, a lot of the people who complain about that in terms of The Last Jedi are the same people who complain about it with Man of Steel and, you know, and Onward.
Well, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, it's not Lucas anymore. And it's clearly, this is very clearly not Lucas because, well, it's a better made film. It's just a better, to me, the editing's better. I mean, it's still, I definitely agree with you where it doesn't feel as special. Mm-hmm. Like, even when, you know, the first of the, episode one?
Yeah.
Even though I still, like, have a vague remembrance of, you know, like, the first time I get to see this in so long, and then, you know, even as, God, I'm trying to remember how old I was when that one came out. But, like, even then realizing, like, oh, this isn't, this doesn't have the heart at all anymore. I mean, I think that it also doesn't hurt that we're entertainment writers, so we know and read about all this shit all the time.
Yeah.
So we also know, like, I completely agree with you about the, there's a, what, another film coming out in a year and a half or something, and then another one, and then another one, and it's no longer a thing that we know that it's a trilogy, and that it's, there's an end, and so
I mean,
we're
it
like,
is and it isn't, but yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, do you mind heading to that Target Plaza so I can do that?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember.
Just, huge blockage there.
I just didn't want to be parked outside the house for too long.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I think that the announcement of a new trilogy following this trilogy doesn't really fundamentally change the math on the fact that we know it's no longer a story with an end point. I do think there's an element of an ending that's implicit to getting rid of Luke and Han and then having Carrie Fisher pass away. And I wonder, had they known when they were making this film that Carrie would be gone,
if they would have... Because there was a very clear opportunity to...
There were several clear opportunities to get rid of her, although one was, like, Star-Lord being jettisoned.
Which is very, like...
But yeah, I'm curious as to whether they might have swapped it out and had Leia go away in this one. And Luke. Although, obviously, she died very suddenly, and there was no real way of addressing that.
Yeah.
Because my understanding is that they set out to make a movie to send off each of those three characters, where the first movie was essentially about Han, the second movie is essentially about Luke, and the third movie was about Leia.
It would have been very hard to... Because I completely and totally was out on this on this film, and I was 100% sure whether she actually survived this film. I actually thought that they took her out specifically because... Like,
well later, later they said... the only reason I know that is because they said it after she passed that they are going to have to rewrite big chunks of 9 because 9 was meant to be the Leia film.
Yeah.
Which makes sense because at this point she is the person around which the rebellion is built. And so the notion of rebuilding a rebellion from essentially scratch following this movie means it would have made perfect sense to have the next movie be about her and or to kill her off because that would have, you know, she is kind of necessary.
Did they do CG for this one at all? I'm trying to remember.
Not that I'm aware of. I believe she had shot out already.
Yeah.
I know that they said they would not do that for episode 9.
Yeah.
And so I imagine she will either die off screen or it will be addressed.
Because that was the one fan, not to insult fanboy here, but like the fact that Akbar died off screen was like, really?
Yeah, like, well, I mean, it wasn't off screen because you got the big fireball that bled through the
bridge
or whatever. But yeah, no, I agree.
I mean, it was just one of those, like, I don't know. I mean, I guess one of the problems is as everybody kind of started getting on one ship.
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of one thing that bothered me about the escape plan is that everyone important was on one ship, and you're like, well, that ship's not going to blow up because then you don't have another film.
Yeah.
So, like, if they had at least put, like, Leia on one or, you know, somebody on another one, you'd be like, okay, even if it's the droid, you know, like, you're like, well, they're not going to kill, you know, marketing employee, but...
yeah, I mean, I think that cinematically it's the best film that they've made. I do think it's maybe not the most satisfying movie, and part of that is being a second act. You know, you have this thing of the rising darkness and the bad guys winning, and it felt like the influence of Empire was very self-consciously there.
Yeah.
To me, and I don't necessarily feel like they stuck that landing the way that I would have liked at the end of the movie.
I would say also, like, I think you also have to, this is kind of a mix of a reboot, remake, something else. So anytime you see that, you're like, well, the original.
Yeah.
So you're constantly And especially when it's something that's basically cinema fucking history.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, this is like remaking Casablanca, or, but kind of doing it, like doing it in a new setting, but you still have the lore of it, which is the one thing that I love about both of these films, The Force Awakens and,
Last Jedi,
is the fact that it's one of the very few, remake, reboot, whatever the hell you want to fucking call it, like continuations of a series, right, that owns and understands the importance of the originals. Yeah. Like, that ending with the little boy and, like, looking out of the stars, like, I start to tear up a little bit, because you're like, especially since, you know, clearly the kid has a little bit of the Force. And the fact that he looked like a little bit like the kid from the kid's Hayden.
Hayden Christensen.
No, but
Jake Lloyd.
Yeah, Jake Lloyd. I don't know. Maybe it's just the haircut now.
Well, no, they were definitely trying to evoke that iconography in a very specific way. I mean, the fact that he was a slave.
Yeah.
You know, which is obviously what happened with not only Anakin in those movies. But,
Anakin.
I'm struck by the fact that they spent so much time setting up these little pairs. You know, following the previous movie, the mythology was the thing that was the most important. And kind of bringing everything back to a present day that makes sense was the most important. So they didn't really spend a ton of time building relationships, especially romantic relationships or potentially romantic relationships. And I feel like now you've built this weird kind of, first of all, as much as many quarters of the internet would like to see it, and I wouldn't mind, I don't necessarily see the Oscar Isaac, John Boyega thing going anywhere at this point.
The fact that he ran up to the drum, too.
Yeah.
First, but yeah.
And the fact that Rey is so clearly enamored John Boyega.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting whether, because now you have like the threesome going on.
The love triangle with Kelly Marie Tran.
Yeah.
Which was a weird.
I know that, like, this is probably the one non controversial point that we'll ever talk about, is, but she's fucking fantastic.
You would think that would be non controversial.
Really? The internet that I'm on
the internet
is like in love with her because
the fanboy internet is angry.
Oh, I forgot, because
she's not white, she's not male, and she's
she's bi, right? Or is her sister, was it her sister who died, or was it her?
I'm not sure. I probably she is, because that would give them something interesting to do with her coming. I can't imagine you make somebody buy and make it a thing and then kill her off in the first scene. God knows.
So can we start the the three polyamorous relationship with it? I just want to burn all the fucking fanboys and like just like literally have films that represent fucking the country. Yeah. Not the, I don't know what era that is supposed to represent, but you know, anyway. Yeah. Like,
I will say I'm torn on some of the things that were set up in the first movie and then did not pay off in this one, or paid off in unexpected ways or underwhelming ways.
Yeah.
I am not particularly put out by the fact that Snoke is nobody. You know, the fact there. I don't know if you're aware of this. There was a whole thing where is Snoke secretly the Emperor? Is he secretly this and that and the other thing? And, you know.
Yeah.
And Snoke's identity became a mystery box. And I'm kind of glad that went nowhere. I mean, maybe not glad, but I do feel like following Empire Strikes Back, the whole revelation of Luke and Vader set this new weird standard for Star Wars especially, but a lot of genre fiction in general, that everybody knows everybody, everything is related, and it's a very, very small universe. and I don't love that.
Yeah, no.
And so I'm not really bothered by things like Snoke isn't anybody. He's just the guy who had Sith powers and filled this vacuum.
Yeah.
I'm somewhat more disappointed by the fact that they built up this wacky mystery box of Rey's parents, and it just became, no, they were a couple of assholes who sold you for drinking money and then died in the ditch.
But I mean, are they? I mean, I feel like also, can you believe a single thing that he says?
That's
because
fair.
It's they didn't. There's no follow through. There's no proof. I mean, yeah, sure, but you know, because I mean,
yeah.
All of our characters are orphans, you know. You know, so it sets her up as they're dead, as at least at minimum. I mean, like we've had this before.
Right.
It's like, you know, we never knew what, you know, who Luke's parents were in the original. So I feel like that's another one. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, I really like the fact that they're setting up. They're taking away. They're potentially, at least. I mean, again, if it is true, they're taking away the fucking royalty. Of the Skywalkers.
Yeah.
And so a royalty that wasn't earned, as we know.
Right.
Like, so it's no, so they're literally dispersing it, especially with, again, with that, the ending of that little kid, whether or not we'll ever see that kid again, who knows, but,
I like the idea of, I really hope that there's no version of this that ends with Kylo Ren somehow being redeemed at this point, because I think that ship has sailed in terms of narrative. You know, and so if we're going to kill him off, I really like the idea of Rey not being biologically related to any of the major players.
Because it,
as you say, it kind of takes it, it fully removes the concept of this small group of people just perpetuating it into eternity. It
also, if you're going to start having films, like, I'm not, again, if you hadn't noticed before, I'm not a fanboy. So I haven't read the books, and I don't know the canon. And you know what? That's 95% of the people who've read this. And so you have to, you don't have to kill off, you know, you don't have to kill them off, but you have to, the Skywalker-like lineage, but you have to remove them. Otherwise, just because they're actors and they're humans, like, you're gonna have continually, you know, I mean, you've killed, you have, everybody has to be gone from this lineage relatively soon. Otherwise, it doesn't fucking, to me, it doesn't continue as a series.
Yeah, well, and I think, too, that the notion of the Skywalkers is this kind of clan of space messiahs. It has a limited shelf life, because when they hid Luke and Leia away and they were under essentially assumed names and, you know, whatever, that's one thing, because it means there's nobody's looking for them.
Yeah.
But at this point, after Anakin and after Luke and after Ben and after the fact that we know there's been 30 years where Luke is a legend.
Yeah.
And everybody knows the intimate details of the original trilogy. Like, the fact that they knew that he redeemed Anakin at the end is kind of a remarkable revelation in this episode.
Yeah.
And so to me, you never get another.
Which is actually very interesting, because he would have had to say that, because he was the only guy in the room, right?
Yes, although, I mean, he would have said it to Leia at a
moment. I guess,
And Leia has kids. And,
But,
yeah, so it's not entirely, like,
perpetuating
his own legend, although I do think we got the sense in this movie that Luke was not above that.
And obviously there's some pipeline going on, because the kids were already telling the new story of Luke and how he fought off everybody or whatever he did, you know.
What I was saying is that there will never, after these three consecutive generations of, like, space wizard gods, you can't believably have another Skywalker airborne that is not hounded for its entire existence and or killed in its crib.
Yeah.
I just don't find it believable. And, yeah, theoretically, you could say, well, Leia had another kid and she hid it away on a blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah.
But that seems like a lot of work to come to, let's just keep it a Skywalker forever, when you can have the alternative, which is we are going to tell these stories without the bloodline being an essential part of it.
Yeah.
I actually, especially with Luke essentially choosing to die and choosing to end the Jedi order, so to speak.
Yeah.
And the revelation, again, assuming it's true, that Rey is not connected to any of these people.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of the next film being a conscious eschewing of the bloodline. Yep. You know, again, I really kind of hope that Kylo Ren dies. I don't see any redemption arc for him, and as such, I don't really see any value in having him around going forward.
The thing is, though, that, you know, then, I mean, I guess there's always a new villain or something.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, back there. But, you know, then we have to have a new villain rising. And
I would love to see, honestly, I would love to see the idea of a Sith Lord ruling at the side of the Emperor or ruling as the Supreme Leader.
Yeah.
Kind of a shoon. And, you know, General Hux we've seen in every one of these new movies. I wouldn't mind seeing him essentially take control as a military leader and relegate the theocratic space wizards to their own kind of paradigm.
Yeah.
Which, again, is part of this is the border between science fiction and fantasy, and the fact that Star Wars is very much fantasy stories set in a science fiction trapping, whereas having a more political story rather than a spiritual story would be more sci-fi kind of friendly.
Yeah. I'm always paranoid, though, or worried about the idea of a Star Wars political story, because we've had.
Yeah.
on the other hand, thank fucking Lord we're out of the hands of George Lucas and, you know, and we're, you know, in the better hands, I think, of people who grew up with it and have a little bit better writing and or at least aren't so owned to this obsessive religious canon that is surrounding this entire series, you know?
Yeah, I'm really interested after seeing this film to see what a Star Wars trilogy by Rian Johnson and presumably starring mostly new characters will yield. It'll be interesting to see whether at the end of episode 9 we then jump forward a few generations and get rid of Rey and Finn and all them, or whether they are the stars of the next trilogy. Because to me, each trilogy thus far has been a new generation.
Yeah.
But by virtue of Luke and Leia and Han being in these films, they haven't really belonged to the new generation.
Yeah.
Those characters are so massive, and they loom so large over the entire story that there's no version of this new trilogy where Luke, Han, and Leia are around full-time, and these other characters really get to own the movie.
Yeah.
But, so I'm interested to see, you know, and again, I'm interested to see how the kind of religious political balance of it shifts, because I do think that having a filmmaker who looked at this through a much more kind of political lens and through a much more, as I say, gray as opposed to the black and white.
Yeah. No, I'm interested in where they're going to bring Finn, because there's all these edges of him. Like, I almost see him. It'd be interesting whether there's anything with him more than just a guy, you know, whether he's the next, you know, whether he's the next Solo, basically, within this world, because, I mean, it's, they gave him the Codebreaker, Benicio del Toro.
I can't remember his name.
But I don't think it's his name.
I'm sure that
he'll be back because he's Benicio del Toro, and also they gave him enough screen time, and you know, and kind of had.
Although one never knows, it's not like he came back to Guardians.
That's true. That's true. But whether or not he'll be a, you know, a Lando or something like that, but I think that I think he's the bad part of a Lando, but none of the good part of Lando.
I couldn't. Was it his ship that Finn landed on and he was like saved by default before he jumped onto, when he fell down the pit before he killed?
Yeah, I don't know what that was he fell down.
But that was another thing though that struck me as kind of not a waste as such. But again, you run the balance with a movie like this of do we play to expectations or do we do something different?
Yeah.
And I think this movie, given any option, did something different almost every time.
Yeah,
which is really exciting. But it's also sometimes you look at it and go, okay, expectations are there for a reason.
Yeah.
And I think narratively what happened with Gwendolyn Christie's character, Phasma, was just not very satisfying.
Yeah, no.
She showed up for just long enough to be like, I still hate you. And then this time I assume she's really dead. Because honestly, if she's not really dead this time, it's not plausible.
Yeah. Fiery death, explosion, everything.
Being thrown down a bottomless pit while being burned alive.
And it's on fire, and she was already, like...
Yeah, her helmet was already open, so it's not like... Yeah.
Yeah.
So to me, I felt like that was kind of a waste of the character, because I don't know...
It was like they're just churning through people.
It's like Rian Johnson had a checklist of all the random dangling threads that J.J. Abrams left at the end of Force Awakens.
Yeah.
And was like, how many of these can we burn away
in
one film?
Which is...
Sometimes literally.
Yeah. A lot literally, actually.
But
I will say the only part of the film that I specifically was uncomfortable in, as in not like it was uncomfortable, was Yoda. Was that whole sequence just not on many different levels? Like
it
felt like the most awkwardly written, awkwardly voiced. Am I right that the voice sounded?
It definitely sounded different. I think that's just because Frank Oz is now like 85.
Was it Oz again? I mean,
I assume so. I haven't.
Because I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to remember the last time I heard. You know, it's been a while since I've watched
Sesame Street.
Well, yeah. But also just he started out as the kind of ghost thing. And then he was really there,
I think that was actually, I have a thought about that. I think that was in there specifically to set up the fact that the Force ghosts can interact with the rest of the world, because otherwise the lightsaber fight with Luke at the end makes very little sense.
But the lightsaber, he's alive. I mean, he's...
Yeah.
As opposed to, like,
but it's still
ghost spirit
a force
thing.
Projection.
It's
an astral projection.
It's nice, though, that if it... Because it sets up, like, you know, Luke can be in the next... Basically, can be completely in the next film.
Right, exactly.
And because, you know, Rey still needs some level of training that she, you know, is not going to get. I do wish that they had allowed... and obviously that ship has sailed, but I do wish that either in Force Awakens or Last Jedi that they had allowed Leia to have some more Jedi power.
Obviously we saw the one big manifestation of it, but the big moment they gave Rey at the end with the rocks.
Yeah.
I really thought that was going to be Leia for a minute. Like, because she was walking behind
that actually would have been really cool.
That would have been a really cool moment for Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
Because, again, that's a thing that has been debated for 30 years, is, like, exactly how, you know. And even in the scheme of what we saw with her going through space, I think there could still be an argument that that was a fairly minimal use of force powers, and that the fact that she was then comatose right afterwards indicates that blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So I feel like we still didn't see her do much, and it would still leave the same kind of debate as to how much and how little she can do or would do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. I would have liked to see a little bit more of that, and I thought that we were going to for like a minute, and then I saw the Falcon come back, and I was just like, oh, okay. And it was a weird beat, because part of the reason I thought it had to be Leia is because I didn't think, for whatever reason, I didn't think Rey was back on the Falcon yet. I thought she was still on whatever she would have used to escape from the... Because, like, somehow the Falcon would have had to circle back around through all those bad guy ships to pick her up at Snoke's cruiser after...
Yeah, because that was a weird cut, because he was passed out or whatever happened, and then... Because I actually thought, I'm like, wait, did I miss something? I'm like, no, they just did... Yeah. That was actually the one cut where I'm like, wait, not only it wasn't as satisfying that we didn't see that whole sequence play out, because... I will say that
I almost wonder if at some point that was going to be the last time we saw them in the film. And then they ended up adding on the... Because, obviously, although it seems unlikely, because thematically the whole movie hinges on the Last Jedi thing.
Yeah.
And so I don't see a version of it where we don't see Rey coming up and doing the rock thing and being like, I'm the Last Jedi now.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what she said in the movie, obviously.
We have a title!
In exactly that, like, Brian from Family Guy voice that I gave it. It's weird that she made that decision. But yeah, there were a couple of weird... And again, I think that, like, that jarring cut kind of ties in with this idea of having seven endings and all the... Like, because it wasn't just that there were a bunch of moments that would have been a suitable cut.
Yeah.
It was like the Lord of the Rings problem where not only you had the, this would have been a suitable cut, but also there were shot choices made that made it feel like this, especially after, I can't remember after which, there was a Leia moment. There was a character beat from Leia.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it was the last thing before we cut to the kids.
Oh, okay.
So it was the second to the last ending.
Mm-hmm.
But after Leia finishes her monologue, it pans to the stars. And, of course, most Star Wars movies end on the stars.
Yeah.
And so it felt very much like, okay, the closing credits.
Like that, I mean, it's because it's interesting because, like the film, you know, film ended and I'm like, wait, is there a... after thing, because now that's a question we have to ask in fucking every single
every
film.
Blockbuster. Yeah.
Not every fucking comedy films that's have true. Them now. That's you true. Know what I mean? But
they actually kind of started with comedy films.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Things
like
the Santa Claus having
But like that little sequence with the kids would have been a fantastic like mid credit break.
Yeah,
and I'm actually maybe like you said, if they've just decided that they're not doing them.
Yeah,
but like to me, like if you've got.
I imagine a lot of the more modern things like that, they've decided they would rather hold off until the Rian Johnson trilogy or whatever, because I think that probably they want 7, 8, and 9 with the original actors and the original blah, blah, blah. They want it to fit as seamlessly as possible into this kind of trilogy of trilogies about the Skywalker family.
Yeah.
And I get that. Like, certainly I'm not going to knock them for choosing a style choice over... kind of what's contemporary at the moment.
Yeah.
But I mean, definitely it's a very good movie. Like I said, I think it's, I agree with you that it's, at least cinematically, it's the best of the Star Wars movies since the prequels.
Yeah.
I think it's difficult.
Well,
since the original trilogy. Sorry.
But, I mean, if you want to go there, that's fine, but don't tell me I said that.
Since the revival.
I don't want that rumor out there that I think the prequels.
But
like personally, I'd rather have the whole fucking thing retconned and love to see them. That actually would be my dream is to see them retconned and then boom, like have them redo the prequels. And
there's a petition now to make this one non-canonical because of course there is. So, I will say and it's one of those. You just see everybody get miserable about stuff, and it's just frustrating and exhausting. But there have been criticisms about how this movie essentially took it overcorrected from the criticisms that Rey was a Mary Sue and made her less competent. I didn't see that, really.
No.
Yes, she made some poor decisions based on the fact that she was trying to redeem Han's kid.
Yeah,
but I really saw that more as this is a continuum of the Jedi's constantly making bad decisions because they let their emotions get in the way of,
And, well, and trying to save, you know, trying to save people, change people, whatever, yeah. like leaving them alive too, which is kind of a problem. Like yeah, cut off their fucking heads. doesn't matter. You have the higher ground. Fucking take it anyway. But it's
well, and there's weird little things like, okay, so you broke your fucking lightsaber.
Yeah,
that's pretty much impossible to replace. Why didn't you take Kylo Ren's while he was passed out?
Yeah. Wait, who? There's a fixed lightsaber in the lineage, isn't there?
I'm sure that there is, but I don't know who you would... I mean, I guess yeah. they can go to Maz, the old lady played yeah. by Lupita Nyong'o.
Yeah.
Which
that was a weird sequence, I gotta say.
Yeah.
Like, it was it felt like a video game, like, in-game thing, yeah, where they're like, yeah. she's fighting this crazy thing. I'm super happy. I enjoy any sort of union jokes, though, yeah. because they were like, oh, it's a union dispute. like, that I enjoyed, at least, yeah. but...
Yeah, it was an odd bit. I mean, I feel like part of it might have been... I know that when Lupita got the job, or I don't know, but this is yeah. how I recall it, that she was hoping for more action
yeah.
than what we saw in the previous movie, was that she was this kind of wizened, eccentric old lady
yeah.
with an implication that she was badass, but she yeah. was never actually doing much. And so I'm sure part of that might just be, you know, they wanted to set her up to have the Yoda moment
yeah.
where the little like midget old person character gets to be a badass in the, you know,
yeah.
in episode 9 or whatever.
Yeah, I know.
And again, that kind of, it almost felt procedural, like checking in with her.
Yeah.
I think it was Oscar Isaac's character who recommended it, but it's just yeah. one of those weird things where, wasn't she Han's friend? Now that he's gone, who had the idea to just call this lady? I can't remember if it was him or if it was Chewie.
I thought it was Finn.
Maybe, but even so, like, then you get to that same question of, like, yeah. she's not really your friend. She was kind of Han and Chewie's friend.
Yeah.
But again, yeah, it was a very, very minor criticism. Yeah. I felt like it was a procedural thing of, this is a character who was important in the last one. She's probably going to be important in the next one, so we got to check in with her in this movie.
Yeah.
Which, there's nothing really wrong with that, but it, as you say, because it felt like kind of a wonky sequence.
Yeah.
The fact that there was no good reason for it to be there, and there was no good reason for anybody to think, oh, she's the one to call,
yeah.
all kind of felt, like, arbitrary.
Yeah.
But again, these are very, very minor criticisms that it just kind of, you know.
I'll be interested to see whether the, because they gave the code, the actual codebreaker,
yeah.
like, so much screen time. I'll be interested to see whether he plays anything to do in the future, because he...
I could see that.
Someone vaguely familiar. I could try...
He reminded me of... the guy from Mad Men,
Ham.
Not John Ham. Oh. His boss in the. I can't check my phone.
Yeah. anyway, but
I can't remember the guy's name.
Yeah.
The head of the agency. Yeah. Anyway.
See that actually. And
it's like a dapper character actor who's got the whitish hair.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. Yeah. That whole, I thoroughly enjoyed that whole sequence, because that, not only because I just enjoy, like, that basically it was a minor class war going on there. Yeah. So I love that. But that whole sequence, again, it felt so heavy of a prequel-inspired sort of thing, but done well.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's because the graphics are just there, the CG, and kind of, like, it's easier to build a world completely out of CG without it, as opposed to the way that... You know, but
that might be part of it. I think a lot of it is that for Lucas's films, it felt like he was doing it for its own sake.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of stuff that was there just because we could do it, so why not? As opposed to now, we all know that doesn't work, and that mm-hmm. there needs to be a narrative hook for it.
Well, I mean, the other thing too is that I really love that these films, and obviously the original trilogy, whatever, mm-hmm. didn't really have an opportunity. But again, like, having that place exist
mm-hmm.
builds a much larger world, and that's one thing that I'm super excited about, the idea of a film every couple years, you know, is the fact that we're starting to establish a much larger world. I have a feeling like they gotta, it'd be weird if they don't go back there because yeah. not only because you got that one kid that's a Jedi and, you know, I mean, like, is, you know, is that kid going to ever play anything? But yeah. like, it's, you've established so much time there.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that we have done more in these films than I think they did in mm-hmm. The original trilogy. There were very few kind of recurring locales in the original trilogy, as I recall it.
Yeah.
And everyone that was there kind of made a big impression.
Yeah.
This one, there's been more recurring locales and more kind of universe building.
Yeah.
And certainly some of them are... It's interesting to see some of them be essentially callbacks. You know, you listen to the score when they were on the yeah. casino planet, yeah. and it was very clearly inspired by the cantina in the first movie.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And you get that same sense of kind of manic energy, mm-hmm. although obviously the look and the feel and the everything was very much different.
Yeah. The only other scene that I like, well, there's a ton of scenes that I love, but thing is that I actually made an audible like,
yeah.
like was when again one of the suicide another one of the when she hits what's her name the new commander, one of the many commanders that yeah. you go through that they pull mutiny on. Again, what the fuck is her name?
Laura Dern,
yeah. Who gets a brief, like, which is, I know it's a complaint, and I feel a little bit, I agree to like 10% that was a complaint for this series mm-hmm. So far, is the fact that they're doing a lot of, well, they're calling them, you know, what, like attention hires or yeah. Stunt casting. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, to me, you if for Phasma, like, you get the person who's like known to be yeah. a fucking badass with a sword.
Not just that, but I also kind of feel like the original trilogy hired unknowns because that's what they had to do budget wise yeah. and practicality wise. And
like,
blah, blah, blah,
with Sam Jackson yeah. as well. I mean, like, you got prequels. If
yeah,
you're,
exactly.
But also, yeah, no, I mean, that part of it, but also you go, you know what, that didn't really work out too well with Hayden Christensen. Like, it didn't work out too well with a lot of the actors. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that, you know...
I'm also reasonably confident that most of these big-name actors that they're getting are doing it for pennies on the dollar because now they get to be in a Star Wars movie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, fuck you. Yeah. Know? Well, hopefully, I guess theoretically that means then they're in the Marvel world and, yeah. well... Disney owns everything now, so yeah, literally, right. physically, like, what, 60% of the fucking box office of every year now, so...
I'm interested to know whether, you know, because J.J. Abrams is coming back for Episode 9,
yeah.
and that was a whole thing, because he was supposed to do Mission Impossible, and they had to buy his contract out from Paramount, essentially.
Yeah.
And I wonder if Paramount would have sold, if they would have realized that... by the time this movie goes into production,
yeah.
that Disney will have bought Fox and they just get fucking everything they want.
Yeah.
Like, all the time. So, again, I don't know that would have changed their opinion in any way,
yeah, yeah.
but
yeah.
I kind of feel... I mean, certainly Paramount has proven themselves to not always be easy to work with, or maybe it's just that Warner Brothers wasn't willing to spend Disney money to get Superman to shave.
Even though I feel like they must have spent that money anyway to...
Yeah, to CG it out. I know that they originally offered Paramount to, if you let him shave, we'll digitally put the mustache in, because it would have been...
cheaper?
Easier. Yeah, well, it would cheaper and easier to make look good than removing
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which is very weird, but...
But, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of if there was any... I will say that as we're starting to get attrition in the old cast, I think it's going to make Episode 9 a tighter film. Mm-hmm. Because part of the reason that we had so many endings and part of the reason that we had a kind of scattered narrative in some of the places in this movie, I think, mm-hmm. is because we just had so many fucking main characters.
Yeah.
And now that we've lost Luke and Leia and Han's gone and mm-hmm. Chewie is essentially assimilated. Chewie and the droids are yeah. essentially assimilated into
Yeah, I mean, they literally
Rey's
ended
story.
On that wide shot of, like, fucking everybody there. Yeah. yeah.
Which, again, was kind of an homage to the last yeah. shot of Empire. But
yeah.
I feel like one of the areas where this movie kind of rambled. And it didn't hurt the movie that much because it was very well made and mm-hmm. so it could ramble and it's fine. But it rambled, and I think we're going to see less of that in the next movie because we are getting fewer and fewer lead characters now that we've had some people die. We've had the original cast is essentially gone now, and we're cutting it down, which will be good because I do feel like some of the new characters either didn't quite get the focus that I would have liked to have seen them get, or by virtue of giving them that additional camera time, they ended up creating these, like the weird kind of plot cul-de-sac that Finn and Kelly Marie Tran's character had going on was probably 10 minutes too long for me because it didn't propel the narrative forward in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
And I think you could have done that same story with less time and less everything, if not for the fact that that was all they gave Finn to do, so they needed that story to be big enough to justify Finn. And so,
And I will say, I agree with you, but also I think that in the film, mm-hmm. it's too long, but in itself, like, I never felt that.
No,
It was a solid enough. It didn't ramble in the way that it was like, okay, well, when are we going to get into the next? Yeah. Let's flash back to what they're going. Because it was all enjoyable enough. Every moment was, you know, the whatever the hell those fucking things are.
Yeah.
Horse, camel things again, this is like, like I keep harping back to this. Like that character, when I saw those things running around and I'm like, oh shit, we're going to have that's what's going to happen.
Right.
And I'm like, and I'm just continually thinking of what the fuck were those things from the prequel that were just fucking horrible. There was something like that, something that they ran out.
Well, there was a lot of things in this that the life forms on the Jedi planet.
Luke's planet. Island.
Which I know has a name, but I don't know what it is. But the life forms on that planet were all, they all kind of felt like Sebulba to me, Watto, the thing that owned Anakin at the beginning of the first movie, because they had the elf noses and the big bellies. Like, there were the giant ones that Luke milked, and then even the ones that were, but even the ones that were, like, the little old nuns who were walking around taking care of the planet, they were little aliens in paper hats and white dresses. I mean, that's pretty much, but even the caretakers or whatever kind of looked like that.
Yeah.
And so to me, I felt like there was a lot of things in this movie that evoked elements of the prequel, but just kind of made it work and
did it better. Yeah. I mean, and again, and I don't know if it's the graphics or what, or just like they have a better sense of, like, he's not so in it. You know what I think it probably is at the end of the day is that unlike Lucas in the prequels, there's at least 12 people above him that go, no. And that's what you need when you have a large budget.
Yeah, $300 million.
James Cameron may be the only guy that can get away with that stuff because, given the $250 million budget, and it doesn't get terrible. It may be weird or maybe its own thing, but, like, well, actually, you know what? We'll see in the continuation of the... Because for some fucking reason, we need more...
Avatar movies. Even though nobody can remember anything about Avatar.
It doesn't matter what it made $1 billion, so...
Yeah. Just...
Why? Anyway.
But all right. Any final thoughts before we...
Go see it.
All
right,
yeah.
If I wasn't, like, so backlogged on films right now, like, there's, like, 3 Billboards, there's Lady Bird I want to see, I would definitely go see it again. I don't listen to fucking, rule of thumb, just don't listen to fucking fanboys ever because this was really fucking good.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that there's a lot of really interesting takes on this movie on both sides of the pro and con.
I can finally read them now.
Yeah.
I stayed away from reading them all. So it's like my criticism of fanboys is literally like seeing some small Reddit threads and then reading a couple lines and be like, nope, I feel like spoilers are here. So
I read a couple of them that people who had seen the film assured me were non-spoilery.
Yeah.
And honestly, I got spoiled on the two big deaths in this movie because there was some asshole on Twitter who was getting into an art, like, she picked a fight with comic book fans, and when I went to block her, just because I didn't have time for that nonsense.
Yeah.
anybody who was arguing with her, she was just copy and pasting a block of Star Wars spoilers at them.
Fucking assholes.
So I'd already been kind of spoiled on the like line and a half that I saw before I was like, oh. So I knew about the Snoke thing and I knew about Luke. I didn't know he died per se, but I was pretty sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, go see it. I don't know why you watched an incredibly spoilery.
Yeah, exactly. What? Yeah, no, we didn't do a thing. Yeah. So.
But I'm gonna go and read many more hot takes on this now because I am not. Again, I'm not like emotionally invested in Star Wars in the way that I am to some of the other blockbusters, and so I'm really interested to see kind of arguments all around. I probably won't have a lot of patience for the everything's horrible and I'm going to try to get it taken out of canon with my petition.
because that'll happen, yeah.
But
we're at like what $400 million for the film already.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, it's canon, guys.
Yeah. You should like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast machine. Yep. You should follow us on Facebook, where if you want to argue with me about Star Wars The Last Jedi, that's where you can do it, because if you do it on my personal wall, I'm going to block you. And
you can... Yeah, no, it's going to be really weird if you argue with me on my Twitter feed, because it's all politics, so yeah. But go for it.
So, thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.